from deep inside your radio. Ladies and gentlemen, no disrespect intended to all of the people on the front lines of law enforcement, but somebody, doggone it, I don't have the name, but one of the dozens of experts paraded on cable news this week, because they got interested in this story of the sniper. I guess it was a crime thing or something. It certainly wasn't foreign policy. One of the, I guess it was a profiler. That would make a series. Let me make a call, and I'll be, you know, it's the weekend. One of the profilers said, every time this guy shoots somebody, it's good for us because we get more clues. Now, I'm sure that person meant, you know, in a very specific context, and it's a tragedy and all the rest of the disclaimers, but basically that's what she said. Yeah, like I have a lot of specifics here. I think it was a she, and I don't know the name. Trust me, she said it. Or he said it. Anyway, the really good news is, by the time this criminal kills all of us, we should have a pretty good idea of who the heck he is. Hello, welcome to the show.
Gee, it's cozy in the park tonight. Oh, when you cuddle up and hold me tight. Stars above begin to glow. They're putting on the Late Late Show. The crazy music in the trees. See the flowers dancing in the breeze. Old man Moon begins to glow. He's putting on the Late Late Show. Birds that should be dreaming start and chirping song. While fireflies are gleaming, and we kiss, kiss all night long. Then we amble back to your front door. I say goodnight and then we kiss some more. I guess you know I love you so. It started on the Late Late Show. Back to your front door. Say goodnight and then we kiss some more. I guess you know I love you so. It started on the Late Late Show.
De uma chaminé de barro, porque não atende ao grito tão aflito da buzina do meu carro. Você no inverno, sem meias, vai pro trabalho, não faz fé com agasalho, nem no frio você crê. Mas você é mesmo artigo que não se imita. Quando a fábrica apita, faz reclame de você. Nos meus olhos você lê que eu sofro cruelmente, com ciúmes do gerente impertinente que dá ordens a você. Sou do sereno, poeta muito soturno, vou virar guarda noturno, e você sabe por quê. Mas você não sabe, é que enquanto você faz pano, faço junto do piano estes versos pra você.
Celestine, get out my dreams.
Okay, the late model Dodge is going from the going off the 605 right now, heading, is that Garfield Boulevard? I cannot tell, because of course I can't see, and it's really not happening, but hello, welcome to the show. It's just another ratings ploy, ladies and gentlemen. I'm simulating a freeway pursuit, a police chase on the freeways, because it's the most surefire ratings grabber in all of Southern California. All the TV stations are doing it. And there's been, according to this week's Wall Street Journal, a 40% increase in the number of people who try to flee the police in Southern California since the last time they checked. Of course, the number of people fleeing the police elsewhere in California is going down. Get with the program, rest of California. It's fun. The Democrats have gotten the Iraq thing behind us, and now we can concentrate on what? Social Security? Excuse me. President Bush Monday night gave another speech rallying us to the war effort. A couple of facts not noted anywhere else. Could this be possible? The president said that Saddam Hussein has been harboring terrorists in Iraq, not pointed out anywhere else. This is publicly available information, but these dots were not connected. The people President Bush was talking about reportedly are being harbored in northern Iraq, the area that's run by the Kurds under the protection of our no-fly zone. That's right, we're harboring the terrorists. Well, you know, our friends. And President Bush said that Saddam Hussein had given refuge to the notorious terrorist Abu Nidal, the one that Ollie North said he was afraid of every night in his testimony, that went around on the internet hoax a couple years ago, last year, but had the name Osama bin Laden substituted for it. But it's really Abu Nidal. Yes, Abu Nidal was in Baghdad for a little while earlier this year. He was assassinated this year, reportedly on orders of Saddam Hussein. That's some refuge. That's some safe harbor, ladies and gentlemen. Intelligence and professionals and diplomats in the Bush government privately have deep misgivings, I'll read it correctly now, about the administration's march toward war, according to Knight Ritter News Service. These officials charge the administration hawks have exaggerated evidence of the threat Hussein poses, including distorting his links to the Al-Qaeda terrorist network, have overstated the amount of international support for attacking Iraq, and have downplayed the potential repercussions of a new war in the Middle East. They charge the administration squelches dissenting views, what administration doesn't, and that intelligence analysts are under intense pressure to produce reports supporting the White House's argument that Saddam poses an immediate threat. Analysts at the working level in the intelligence community are feeling very strong pressure from the Pentagon to cook the intelligence books, said one official, speaking on condition of anonymity. A dozen other officials echoed his views in interviews. No one who was interviewed disagreed. Rumsfeld said on September 26, U.S. has bulletproof confirmation of links between Iraq and al-Qaeda members. Officials said Rumsfeld's statement was based in part on intercepted telephone calls in which an al-Qaeda member who apparently was passing through Baghdad was overheard calling friends or relatives, according to intelligence officials. The intercepts provide no evidence that the suspected terrorist was working with the Iraqi regime or that he was working on a terrorist operation while he was in Iraq. I found that. Did you? Okay. But wait, there's more. If you're looking for a country that has nuclear weapons already, where sympathizers with al-Qaeda are not only have safe haven in the country, they have high-ranking positions in the intelligence agency of that country. It's Pakistan. Oh, they had an election this week. That's right. And Iraq's having an election next week. Party officials have chosen the Whitney Houston song, I Will Always Love You, as the campaign theme tune for Saddam Hussein. The song accompanies dawn-to-dusk election broadcasts on the three state-controlled television stations, which feature continuous footage of Saddam. He's shown praying, kissing children, firing an ancient rifle one-handed, waving to the masses, and striking heroic poses. You want an election? We got an election. Pakistan, ladies and gentlemen. They're our friends. Vladimir Putin, he's not convinced. At a brief news conference this week, he expressed skepticism at the immediate threat posed by Saddam Hussein, as set out in the British government's dossier. He said, quote, any government would release some information to the mass media that is certainly done to shore up their position. It could be seen as a propagandistic step. He added, quote, Russia doesn't have in its possession any trustworthy data which would support the existence of nuclear weapons or weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. We haven't received from our partners any such information as yet. Just questions, ladies and gentlemen, just questions. Just asking questions, because the Democrats have got Iraq behind them now, so they can run the Social Security cartoon on their website some more. This is from the Glasgow Sunday Herald. Now, this is the second time I've read you something from the Glasgow Sunday Herald. It doesn't appear to be a crackpot newspaper. It's for sale, if you'd like to buy it. And the bidders for it appear to be reputable, other reputable newspapers. So, you know, it's not like the National Enquirer is bidding for it. That's all I can tell you about the Glasgow Sunday Herald. Now I'm going to quote from it. 5 months before September 11th, the U.S. advocated using force against Iraq to secure control of its oil. It's a document that fundamentally questions the motives behind the administration's desire to take out Saddam Hussein. Strategic Energy Policy Challenges for the 21st Century describes how America is facing the biggest energy crisis in its history. It targets Saddam as a threat to American interests because of his control of Iraqi oil fields and recommends the use of military intervention as a means to fix the U.S. energy crisis. It was commissioned by James Baker, former U.S. Secretary of State under George Bush 41, and submitted to Cheney in April 2001, 5 months before September 11th. It advocates a policy of using military force against an enemy such as Iraq to secure U.S. access to and control of Middle Eastern oil fields. Quote, Iraq, quote the document, Iraq remains a destabilizing influence to the flow of oil to international markets from the Middle East. Saddam Hussein has also demonstrated a willingness to threaten to use the oil weapon and to use his own export program to manipulate oil markets. This would display his personal power, enhance his image as a pan-Arab leader, and pressure others for a lifting of economic sanctions against his regime. The United States should conduct an immediate policy review toward Iraq, including military, energy, economic, and political diplomatic assessments. The document says the United States remains a prisoner of its energy dilemma, and that one of the consequences of this is a need for, quote, military intervention. It says the central dilemma for the U.S. administration is that the American people continue, this is quotes, to demand plentiful and cheap energy without sacrifice or inconvenience. With the energy sector in critical condition, a crisis could erupt at any time which could have potentially enormous impact on the U.S. It would affect U.S. national security and foreign policy in dramatic ways. The the report says the U.S. will never be energy independent and is becoming too reliant on foreign powers supplying it with oil and gas. The recommended response is to put oil at the heart of the administration, a, quote, reassessment of the role of energy in American foreign policy, unquote. You also know, of course, that among the people helping Saddam Hussein rebuild his oil infrastructure after the Gulf War was Halliburton, a company owned by Dick Cheney. Cheney's firm did $20 million worth of business with Saddam, whom Cheney now calls, of course, a murderous dictator. Just questions, just stuff that you don't hear from the floor of the Senate, ladies and gentlemen. More about that later in the broadcast, but there's so much other stuff to talk about. For example, the apologies of the week. So many apologies this week. This is a bumper crop for bumper week for apology news. An article that appeared last week on the front page of Washington State University student newspaper, the Daily Evergreen, was supposed to celebrate racial diversity and inform readers that October is Filipino American History Month. But instead, an error in the story has caused embarrassment for the student journalist, turned the paper into a national example of plagiarism and poor judgment. Carrying the headline, Filipino American History Recognized, the October 3rd story began by describing ceremonies held in Pullman, Washington, a day earlier to kick off Filipino American History Month. Several paragraphs into the piece, material copied verbatim from a website was included in historical background. A portion of the material was incorrectly translated from Spanish to English. It read in part, on October 18, 1857, the first Filipinos landed on the shores of Morro Bay, California, on a Spanish galleon called the Nuestra Señora de Buena Esperanza, which, according to the story, translates to the big-ass Spanish boat. The correct translation is Our Lady of Good Hope. The Daily Evergreen would like to sincerely apologize for the injustice served to the Filipino-American, Spanish-speaking, and Catholic communities on the front page of the paper, the Evergreen later said. The story were plagiarized. The parts of the story, including the translation, were plagiarized from an inaccurate website. We hope these groups accept our deep regret. Our deep, big-ass regret. Malaysian Prime Minister Mahathir Mohamad said he is satisfied with the apology from the United States Embassy over the brusque treatment he and his deputy received at the hands of U.S. immigration officials recently. Enough. For me, it's sufficient. I didn't even mention it until it happened to Abdullah, he told a press conference. That's his deputy prime minister. He was asked to take off his shoes at a security checkpoint in New York, even though he was leading an official delegation. The Prime Minister, Mahathir Mohamad, said when he landed in New York during a recent visit, a U.S. security officer had boarded the plane and ordered the passengers about in a rough manner. Said the Prime Minister, I was in my private plane. I'm not going to carry a bomb in a government plane. Their approach towards me was rough, but that's their country. If they want to be rude, we will not go to their country then. A disc jockey who made an on-air prank call to the widow of St. Louis Cardinals pitcher Darrell Kyle has been fired, the radio station announced this week, and the radio station apologized. The personality, Bo Duran, is quoted as saying he's truly sorry for having offended Mrs. Kyle and the Cardinals organization. He had called the widow at her hotel and asked if she had a date for the playoff game. That's cute. That's a cute radio stunt. Gosh, that's almost as good as a car chase. The German media conglomerate Bertelsmann expressed regret this week for its conduct under the Nazis and for later efforts to cover it up. A group of scholars issued an extensive report documenting the company's collaboration with the Nazis. They own BMG, they own RCA, they own a bunch of publishers. Bertelsmann. Bertelsmann probably also profited from Jewish slave labor at a handful of printing plants in Lithuania where it contracted work. Far from resisting the Nazis, as it once claimed, Bertelsmann used its ties with the regime to transform itself from a provincial Lutheran printing company into a mass-market publisher. It was the largest supplier of books to the German army. Some of these titles were replete with anti-Semitic themes. Well, it's a German army. What do you want? The chairman of Bertelsmann, Gunther Thielen, said the company accepted the conclusions of the commission. I would like, he said, to express our sincere regret for the inaccuracies the commission has uncovered in our previous corporate history of the World War II era, as well as for the wartime activities that have been brought to light. But the management did stop short of apologizing for the company's wartime record. Can you really apologize for the actions of a different generation and what we view as a different company? Said Tim Arnold, who coordinated the commission's work on behalf of Bertelsmann. It is a global company with very different values. Our regret is genuine and sincere. Publishing company lied. Go figure. Geraldo Rivera, did he apologize? Well, again, this week he said in a memo to Fox News colleagues, I apologize for the error when last December he said he was walked on the sacred ground where some troops were killed. He said, an honest mistake confusing one incident of friendly fire in Tora Bora with another in far-off Kandahar. I again apologize for the error. Geraldo Rivera, ladies and gentlemen, joining the big club. And here's a surprise. Ian Duncan Smith, the head of the Conservative Party in Great Britain, was reported to be apologizing for the hurt caused by Maggie Thatcherism and pledged never again. In a brutally frank repudiation of the excesses of the Thatcher government of the 1980s, the current conservative leader, under fire, admitted to more than 3,000 delegates at the annual party conference that the party suffered two humiliating election defeats because it did not move with the times. Referring to the conservative years between 1979 and 1997, Mr. Duncan Smith said, all of us want to remember the good things we did, and there were many, but beyond this hall, too many people remember the hurt we caused and the anger they felt. Well, I say this to you, never again will we take the people of Britain for granted. Until people see our party has learned the lessons of 1997, we will go on getting the results of 1997. That was when they lost. Finally, ladies and gentlemen, two other pieces of news about apologies. Most individuals who've been wronged agree they feel better after receiving apologies. Now researchers have found scientific proof to back up that claim. The data suggests that apologies and restitution can have an immediate positive impact on physiological and subjective responses to transgressions, according to Dr. Everett Worthington of the Virginia Commonwealth University. And CBS News Productions is producing a pilot for the A&E network, quote, I'm so sorry, unquote, which will profile America's most famous apologies and investigate the cultural phenomenon of the mea culpa. Dear CBS News Productions, you are so welcome.
We'll be right back.
This is Le Show, and that's not the only great new TV show idea swirling around. A controversial Argentinian reality TV show that pits unemployed people against each other soon could be adapted for TV stations around the world. No, this isn't bum fights. This is good. Sony Pictures Television has acquired the international rights to Human Resources, in which jobless contestants compete for jobs, cash, prizes, and employee benefits. Critics claim the show makes light of the tragedy of unemployment. The hour-long game show airs live weekdays in Argentina and has struck a chord in a country where half the population is out of work. Oh, big ratings. Studio audiences and at-home viewers choose which of the two candidates is best qualified for the job up for grabs each weekday. Sony claims the show has awarded more than 184 new jobs to local contestants in 91 broadcasts. The Sony will pitch the format to buyers at the big international TV market in Cannes. A German cable channel is preparing an unnamed show along the same lines without having to pay Sony. They'll apologize in 50 years. Speaking of homelessness, the Santa Monica City Council this week, after great Sturm und Drang, speaking of Germans, finally passed a couple of measures to crack down on the homeless in Santa Monica. So you now have to get a permit and jump through a few other hoops before you can set up a program to feed homeless people or any people that show up in the public parks. And they've made it against the law to sleep in the doorways in downtown and along Main Street in Santa Monica. So I think the homeless people will just give up and go away as opposed to finding doorways in the non-specified neighborhoods? Yeah, that's what they'll do. Back to Iraq. No, a couple more things. People who didn't know that somebody might take it into his head to use an airliner as a weapon to crash into a building or something. From Littleton, Colorado, dug up from the CNN website by a listener. The gunman's diary, this is Klebold and Harris, indicates that if they had survived, they wanted to hijack and crash an airplane into New York City. Okay. Nobody could have imagined that except Dylan Klebold and Harris, ladies and gentlemen. Klebold and Harris, for your listening pleasure. You do know that the director of the CIA said this week that Baghdad, for now, appears to be drawing a line short of conducting terrorist attacks with conventional or chemical or biological weapons. Should Saddam conclude that a U.S.-led attack against his country could not be deterred, according to CIA Chief George Tenet, quote, he probably would become much less constrained in adopting terrorist action, unquote. America made him do it. From those people who were interviewed by Knight Ritter, all agreed that Saddam is a threat who eventually must be dealt with. None flatly opposes military action, but they say the U.S. government has no dramatic new knowledge about the Iraqi leader that justifies the current urgent call to arms. I've seen nothing that's compelling, said one military officer who has access to intelligence reports. Some lawmakers have voiced similar concerns after receiving CIA briefings. But we all, you know, CIA can cook the books one way or the other. So, what does that prove? You know that this week Harry Belafonte denounced Colin Powell as a He didn't say traitor to his people, but he said words to the same effect. And Powell lightly dismissed it on Larry King Live, probably because, you know, he would have heavily dismissed it if more people were watching. But Powell has his hands full now in the wake of the Bush triumph in Congress in trying to get a similar resolution through the United Nations. And that may be the occasion this weekend for a phone call from a former president to a current one.
Enduring Freebird. Hey, 43, congratulations. Well, thanks. You know, I learned a long time ago, you always bet against the Yankees. Eventually, they're going to lose.
I meant congratulations on the vote in the Congress on the Iraq deal.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, you know, I had the Democrats caving like a Cuban relief pitcher facing Castro at the plate.
Mm.
You know, the young Castro, I mean.
Yeah.
I'm sure he can still intimidate a pitcher, you know, just because of his, communist thing.
No,
but
no. Just very well handled.
So how's everybody?
No, just fine. Barr's a little disappointed with the new season of The Sopranos, but otherwise, everything is fine.
Oh, hey, listen, I couldn't even watch The Three Tenors, so I can't even imagine.
So now that you got Congress in your pocket, you got to go deal with the big boys of the UN. No, you don't want or need my advice. You got Condi, you got Cheney, Rummy. Colin.
Oh, Colin's a good man.
I didn't say he wasn't.
I didn't say you did.
Didn't.
Well, but look, 41, I respect the heck out of your experience. I know you were at the UN, although I don't remember much about that period. Those were my corona years.
Well, good times for us, too. Gromyko came to New York 1 year. Took him to the Russian tea room. He spent the whole meal just giggling. Said it was about as Russian dressing.
Wow. See, all these years, I thought Russian dressing was just another name for Thousand Island. You know, I had no idea it was, you know, authenticated or I guess more accurately, indigenous.
You know, but the UN is a tricky place. You think you got the votes, and then you turn around for a minute, you don't have the votes. You're going to start all over again. It's like building a house of cards.
No, I know, but using real cards. I got you.
Yeah.
I got you, 41. But look at here. As long as I have you on the phone, let me rope you into the discussion we're having. Condi's here.
Mm-hmm.
Karl Rove. I had Karen Hughes on the speakerphone up until her kid threw up. We're just trying to nail down the name of the operation in Iraq because, you know, that's the next real message we're sending.
Mm-hmm. What does Colin say?
Please. He says Desert Storm 2. This time it's personal.
Yeah.
But I think he was kidding, you know. Hard to tell sometimes. I mean, I think he was steamed about the Harry Belafonte thing, but, you know, wouldn't you know it, the very next time I saw him, he was eating a banana, so...
Well, Desert Shield
and
Desert Storm... So,
see, Condi likes Desert Sting. What is it that...
It's sudden, it can be very painful, and it's over very quickly, and we pull out and just leave the stinger in there.
Yeah, now those aren't real stingers. Those are kind of expensive, although that is a nice little order for...
No, not the missile, Mr. President, just the figure of speech.
Okay, there you go.
So, what's Karen Hughes' input?
Yeah, well, Karen likes Desert Rampage. I mean, you're Saddam Hussein.
Mm-hmm.
You hear we've just named it Operation Desert Rampage. It's, it's got to sound like we're really not screwing around this time, you know? I mean, not that I'm saying we were screwing around last time, but...
Desert Rampage. Sounds like spring break in Palm Springs.
You know something? It kind of does.
Yeah.
As I say, Karen was having child care issues. So,
well, what about General Rove? What's his idea?
Hey, since we had to go to Congress, Colonel's been demoted to Lieutenant Colonel, but...
No, but really.
Well, Carl has tested a bunch of names.
Yeah,
Not that I pay any attention to polling or testing or any of that, but I do pay attention to Carl.
And he pays attention to polling and testing.
Well, he does whatever he does. Yeah. You know, I didn't ask Alex Rodriguez how he went about hitting pitches before the Rangers made the deal for him.
Well, they made the deal for him after you sold the team.
Well, that's one reason I didn't ask him. But anyway, Carl likes Operation Desert Goodbye.
Yeah. It's got finality.
Yeah, and yet, like Carl says, it's not rash. It's not unilateralistic.
Yeah. Don't know, son. Guess it may be the last person on Earth to call something else wimpish, but...
Oh, it's wimpish, but like Carl says, only Republicans have the balls to carry out a policy so severe we can afford to give it a wimpish name.
Yeah.
You know, the Democrats, they're the ones who have to... Well, you know, they'd go for Operation Desert Sledgehammer, Desert Revenge. Or,
have they suggested those?
Well, Tom Daschle, as a prize for his supporting our resolution,
mm-hmm.
wanted serious consideration for Operation Desert Finale.
Might as well call it Desert Climax. You know, get more of the young males.
Well, see, that's interesting you say that. Mm. Dick Cheney phoned in from his wherever, and his point was, we already got the guys. You know, they either want to fight or they want to drink beer and watch the footage, so let's get the girls and the women on board with something like Operation Desert Dialogue.
Kind of cute.
Yeah.
Do we need the word desert?
Yeah, it's part of a set. You know, Andy Card calls it a franchise.
Yeah, well, you know what?
Hmm?
Let me sleep on it.
Yeah, Mom too.
Not gonna sleep on her.
No, I mean maybe she can sleep on it.
Oh, you bet. Okay, 43, just reminding you the UN can be one heck of a briar patch. Don't send any signals that you're not 100% behind Colin.
Hey, 43, even Rumsfeld says that now.
Yeah.
And I asked him your question,
mm-hmm.
and he swears he's never even met Belafonte. So,
well, son, nothing's a coincidence, so.
Hey, 41, you're saying that to the wrong man.
Yeah.
And if I didn't believe that, I wouldn't ask myself every morning, WWJCTW. What would Jesus call this war? So look, have a great week.
Will do. Call me if you...
Oh, don't worry. It's all under control.
Mm.
Matter of fact, that's kind of my choice.
What is?
Operation Desert Under Control.
Mm.
Think about it. Give my love to Mom.
Will do. And will do. Bye-bye.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, tales of airport security. Dear Harry, writes TR, I've been meaning to get this airport security experience to you since hearing the tales on your show. Several months ago, I was traveling with my girlfriend to San Francisco from Chicago Midway. This being the first trip on a plane since the 9/11 incident, I was very diligent in cleaning both carry-on and checked baggage. So there I was, shaking my leather satchel out over a table to free it of any hidden dust or lost personal items, and a real mess it was. Intentionally, I packed almost nothing but a laptop and a few other odds and ends in my carry-on. All seemed to be going well as I glided through security at Midway. Unfortunately, we had to make a stop in Kansas City as part of our flight and change planes. At Kansas, each gate has its own security and screening, so we had to go through yet another check. Alas, something showed up on the scanner as my bag passed through without, of course, a laptop in it. I passed the slipper check and pat down with a breeze, but the baffled security had to put the bag through the scanner a few more times in order to find what they saw, in which I didn't see either. In a side pocket, the security guard slipped her hand to the deep bottom and, with much concern on her face, pulled out a 15-inch solid steel file weighing 2 to 3 pounds for filing steel, not wood. Naturally, in this day and age, it occurred to me I was at the very least going into some small room for a cavity search, deep questioning, and a delayed flight departure. So I said calmly, "You can have it." She's still being speechless. I thought the look of shock and achievement couldn't have gotten any worse on her face. Superior came peering over her shoulder and said, "That's fine. He can take it." Silent, deflated, and aghast, she placed it back in my bag, and on the plane I hopped, unwillingly forced to take the file with me. Nick writes, "Dear Harry, I wanted to write and tell you about my airport security experience. This was at the beginning of the summer, and my family and I were going to Hawaii. We live in Tallahassee, Florida. There were quite a few flights. There were 8 of us. None of us ever got searched. Now, I'm a drummer. So I generally carry sticks with me everywhere I go. On this trip, I had brought 2 pairs of sticks, 1 pair of regular wooden sticks, and 1 pair of metal sticks. I was worried when I thought about this, but I was already in Hawaii, and I couldn't leave them there. Also, I'd already got past the Tallahassee, Atlanta, Denver, LA, and Honolulu airports. I can see how the wooden sticks might have gotten through the X-ray machines. But the metal ones? I got back through the Honolulu, San Francisco, and Atlanta airports on the way back home. I guess drumsticks are just not on their list of bad things that don't get on those planes." And finally, from Elvis Costello's diary of his online journal of his American tour. This is Elvis Costello writing now. "Concluding the U.S. tour in Atlanta, we flew early the next morning via Chicago to Tokyo. The journey did not get off to a sparkling start. I had one of those petty and ridiculous disagreements with a security person. Obviously, it is essential that security procedures be improved in the aftermath of recent events. But the airlines, airport authorities, and federal government just will not pay what is required to get sufficiently trained personnel. Here's an example of the current absurdity. I was asked to take my case for a random screening. This was not strictly true on 2 counts, as I was allowed to elect which of my cases would be searched, which seemed rather odd. It is also true that my alien passport seems to have invited a similar search on each one of the flights that I've been obliged to take since late 2001, so these things aren't that random. Needing 2 hands to swing my case into place, I dropped my ticket wallet on the counter, an action that triggered an alarming reaction from the security woman in the brown nylon uniform. In the words of Pete Thomas, she was painted for war with an extraordinary choice of makeup that made it appear as if she was preparing for a Star Trek convention. Apparently, my travel documents were capable of dashing the security counter to bits. When I turned to warn my traveling companions that we were at the mercy of an hysteric, she started cackling with a truly disturbing glee and informed her colleagues that she was going to force me to miss my plane, as she was ordering a suspension of my search. I realize and respect that such workers are underpaid and overworked, but it seemed to have escaped her notion that one of the purposes of security is to make travelers feel more secure. Don't think that these remarks indicate a flippant or disrespectful attitude in matters of security. It is the traveling worker such as myself who is obliged to take these matters very seriously. When I finally located a sane and weary senior member of staff, I inquired by what authority the suspension of my baggage search could be justified. The supervisor informed me that to turn my back on the search of my bag was against federal regulations. When I pointed out that there was not one sign posted to inform travelers of these federal regulations, she replied that federal regulations do not require that we tell you about federal regulations. Joseph Heller died for someone's sins, but not for mine. The fact that the hapless security operative who had the unpleasant task of picking through my dirty laundry had her back to me throughout, thereby obscuring any possible view of the examination, was a detail that I thought prudent not to mention. So I was free to go, and said farewell for now to the land of the free. Ladies and gentlemen, when the Santa Monica City Council voted to approve those crackdowns on the homeless this week, they also noted it might be necessary for them to start having some all-night bathrooms open in the city. They haven't had it up to now because they said the city couldn't afford it, thereby defying the impression of a lot of us who pass through Santa Monica that the city is, in fact, an all-night bathroom. Ladies and gentlemen, the FCC has, for the first time, granted permission to a TV station to cease analog broadcasting. The station, Channel 53 in Atlantic City, New Jersey, is a full-power UHF station in the Philadelphia market. It can cease analog transmission at any time and go digital only. Why would it do that? Because it can then demand that local cable operators carry its digital signal in analog. Its digital tower is closer to the city, so it gets more viewers that way. The cable systems, of course, have to buy digital to analog converters, another piece of equipment they never thought they'd need. Dear Mr. Shearer, for your files on who could have imagined 9/11, I provide the following precedent: the 1944 Bugs Bunny cartoon Hair Force. Bugs does battle with a Nazi gremlin who takes over a U.S. Army bomber. In the climactic scene, Bugs struggles with the gremlin for control of the aircraft. He gets control of the plane just seconds before the gremlin crashes it, puts it into a vertical bank, and steers it sideways between two rectangular skyscrapers of equal height. Ladies and gentlemen, if that doesn't conclude this edition of the show, I don't know what will. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USEN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the coast of North America on shortwave at WBCQ The Planet, 7.415 megahertz, and around the world whenever you want it at two locations on your computer, www.harryshearer.com and www.kcrw.com. And it would be just like having all those nagging questions answered, even by Democrats, if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. Thank you. the email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. The show Internet Services by Steve Mack. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of SAS, a satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, a community struggling not to be recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.